Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we are diving deep into a topic that, it touches almost everyone at some point. Back pain. It is incredibly widespread, right? You, me, our families, friends. Chances are we or someone we know is dealing with it, maybe right now.
Absolutely. And the source material you shared, it really emphasizes just how central the spine is. It notes that most orthopedic issues and even, you know, many physical and psychological challenges are somehow related back to this core structure.
Yeah, it's foundational. So our mission today with this deep dive is to take this text and really try to understand what it's telling us about the causes and maybe the treatments for back pain.
Right.
It covers some familiar ground, definitely, but it also seems to venture into some, let's say, less conventional territory.
It does, yeah.
So get ready, because we're going to explore the nuances and maybe some surprising facts hidden in this source.
Indeed. And one of the most striking things the source hits us with right away is just the sheer puzzle of back pain itself.
The puzzle? How so?
Well, it states that a huge majority, something like 85% of all back pain, what the source calls Lumbalgien in German, is defined as non-specific.
85% non-specific. Okay, what exactly does that mean, according to this material?
It means the precise, like, identifiable cause isn't clearly known. And this is where it gets really interesting.
Uh-huh.
The source points out there isn't a strict, direct link between, say, the amount of structural change you see on an X-ray, like wear and tear on vertebrae or discs.
Right, the stuff you'd think is the cause.
Exactly. Or even things like scoliosis, postural issues. There's no strict correlation with when or why pain actually starts. The body's system just... well, it loses its stable balance. It decompensates is the term used.
Decompensates.
Yeah. And the exact reason why it breaks down then is often a mystery.
Wow. So it's not just about how worn your spine looks on an image. The physical change doesn't automatically equal pain.
That's the challenge this source really throws at conventional thinking. It also talks about pain that travels down the leg, lumbosacral.
Sciatica-like pain.
Kind of. But here's another twist. The source says most of this radiating pain is not the specific kind caused by a disc directly pressing on a nerve root.
Okay, wait. So not usually a classic slip disc causing that sharp pain down the leg?
According to this source, often not. It's more frequently categorized as pseudoradicular pain.
Pseudoradicular. Okay. Yeah. Pseudo meaning false, so it mimics nerve root pain, but isn't caused by the nerve being pinched right there at the spine.
That's the idea presented, yeah.
So what does cause it then in this view?
The source points mainly to two things.
Okay.
Joint blockages and significant muscle tension.
Okay.
And it really highlights two key players they see again and again. Blockage of the iliosacral joint, that's the ISG, connecting your sacrum to your pelvis.
Right, back of the hip, basically.
Mm-hmm. And kind of reciprocal, like opposing tension and twisting in the back and hip muscles. This results in what they term pelvic torsion.
Pelvic torsion. So a twisting of the pelvis itself. How does that one issue ripple through the body?
Well, the source explains that this torsion creates a twisting effect throughout the entire back and all the connected joints, too. It's a chain reaction.
I can picture that.
They also add that after significant stress or trauma, could be physical, could be emotional, the pelvic floor muscles and the surrounding fascia.
Fascia, that connective tissue network.
Exactly, that web throughout the body. It's often found to be persistently tense. The source uses a German phrase, therapy-resistant Verspannt, meaning resistant to conventional therapy. Stubborn tension.
Huh. And for that specific stubborn tension, does the source suggest why it happens? An underlying reason?
It does, yeah. It proposes this particular tension is often rooted in a blockage of a posterior branch of the vagus nerve.
The vagus nerve. That's involved in, like, the rest and digest system,
yeah.
Right? Stress response.
Precisely. The idea here is that this blockage disrupts the normal signaling in that area, somehow leading to that persistent, often painful tension you feel low down in the coccyx region and the ISG itself. It's linking the nervous system directly to that deep muscle tension.
Okay, so we're building a picture here. Back pain. Largely nonspecific, not always directly tied to structural wear we can see, frequently linked to mechanical things like ISG blocks, pelvic torsion, but also potentially deeper stuff like stress, fascial tension, even the vagus nerve. How does the source contrast, say, traditional approaches with something different?
Right. So the source first lays out the, you know, the typical classical approach. This usually has three parts.
Okay.
Symptomatic treatment, that's pain relief, muscle relaxants. Then functional treatment, aiming to release blockages, tension, maybe through physio or manual therapy.
Standard stuff.
Yeah. And third, prophylactic measures, improving posture, strengthening muscles to prevent it coming back.
That sounds like the standard playbook, pretty much what you'd expect.
It is. But then the source introduces this perspective from what it calls integral orthopedics.
Integral orthopedics, okay. Different name.
And it takes a much wider view, even though it's rooted in orthopedics.
So what does this perspective see as the core problem, the root cause?
This is where it really tries to look deeper into the whole system. It sees the root cause stemming from a stress-induced disruption in what they call neurovegetative regulation.
Okay, neurovegetative regulation sounds technical. Can you break that down a bit based on the source?
Yeah, basically the source is talking about how our involuntary nervous system regulates things.
Yeah.
You know, heart rate, digestion, the stress response stuff that happens automatically.
The autonomic nervous system, got it.
Right. They propose that significant stress can block or mess up this system's ability to regulate properly. And that disruption, according to the source, creates tension, specifically in the body's fascia system.
Back to the fascia, that connective tissue web.
Exactly. And this fascial tension, in turn, irritates how information flows through the body, especially within what they call the connective tissue ground system.
Okay, connective tissue ground system. Okay, another layer. What's that in this context?
Think of it like the body's basic matrix or scaffolding. It surrounds cells, tissues. The source suggests this ground system is crucial for communication within the body,
right.
And it can get kind of stiff or rigid when that neurovegetative system is disrupted by stress.
Ah, okay. So the integral view is connecting the dots between stress, the involuntary nervous system's regulation, and the body's actual connective tissue network, seeing those as foundational issues.
Precisely. The core idea of integral orthopedics, as it's presented here, is you need to address not just the pain, the symptom, but simultaneously treat these underlying neurophysiological and biomechanical causes.
The stress blocks, the tight fascia, the disrupted info flow.
Right. It's looking at the whole system that's contributing to the problem, not just the end result.
Okay, let's explore the actual process described for this integral approach. How does it work in practice, according to the source?
Well, it starts with observation, noticing that pelvic torsion we talked about earlier. But then the initial step isn't just, say, physically adjusting the pelvis. No, it involves searching for and addressing internal causes, things on higher levels.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with something the source calls scar and navel integration.
Scar and navel integration. That definitely sounds outside the usual box. What's the thinking there?
It does sound unusual, yeah.
Yeah.
But the source describes it as a way to address stress energy. They propose this energy gets kind of stuck, accumulated in the upper abdomen.
Stress energy in the gut area.
That's the idea. They note it can come partly from external factors, and it puts a burden on the body's vegetative nervous system. So the technique aims to reintegrate this stuck energy back into the whole system using the navel area as a focal point.
So they're suggesting built-up stress and tension, maybe in the gut, is linked to back issues, and this technique helps release it via the navel.
That's the concept laid out in the source, yes. And the intended outcome, by connecting with and releasing this abdominal stress energy, is a gradual relaxation of those pulls and tensions throughout the fascia and those muscle joint chains connecting to the back.
Okay. What happens if blockages in those muscle and joint chains are still there after that step?
Right. Good question. The source explains that any remaining blockages are then addressed using a technique called orthobiony positioning.
Orthobiony.
And this is a really key point. This technique offers relaxation to those muscle and joint chains. It doesn't force it.
It offers relaxation, as opposed to, like, cracking or manipulating it.
Exactly. The source explicitly contrasts this with more manipulative techniques. So if a blockage persists, even after being offered relaxation through orthobiony,
then what?
Then the integral orthopedics approach, as described here, views that blockage as a currently useful compensation mechanism for the body. It's there for a reason, maybe protecting something else.
So they don't try to just push through it.
No, they respect it. Instead, they continue searching for whatever remaining cause of imbalance there might be within that whole complex fascia muscle joint connection.
That's a really interesting distinction, respecting the body's protective state, even if it's causing pain right now.
It is, yeah.
What other kinds of treatments does the source mention might be needed sometimes within this broader integral framework?
Well, because it sees the body as so interconnected, the source notes that sometimes things like manual or general medical treatment of abdominal organs might be needed.
Like problems with the organs themselves contributing.
Potentially, yes. Or even psychotherapy to address deeper stress factors. And also systematic changes in things like work habits, diet, or other lifestyle factors. It really emphasizes a holistic, whole person view.
Makes sense. Okay, circling back to that pelvic torsion issue, how does the source connect that specific imbalance to those sudden acute back pain episodes people get?
Ah, yes. The source states that pelvic torsion, or sort of unresolved aspects of it, significantly reduces the back's resilience, its ability to handle strain. And that often paves the way for acute episodes like lumbago.
Lumbago, yeah, or hexenchest, the witch's shot, as it's called.
Exactly. Or ischialgia, those sudden sharp pains that just seize you up.
You know the ones. You bend down wrong and bam.
Precisely. These are episodes of sudden, really strong pain that cause the back to stiffen up rigidly, often in a visibly awkward or contorted posture.
And how does the source interpret that painful stiffening? Is it just the body failing?
No, and this is another really fascinating insight from the source. It views this stiffening, painful as it is, as usually an intelligent protective reaction by the body.
Intelligent? How?
It's the body trying to immobilize the area to prevent something worse, more serious damage, especially to the discs or the nerve roots during that moment of vulnerability or overload.
So the pain and stiffness are actually the body's defense mechanism kicking in, trying to protect itself.
That's the perspective presented here, yes. And the source reinforces that effectively treating these acute cases means looking beyond just the immediate pain.
You have to look at the backstory.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You need to consider all the factors that led first to that underlying vulnerability, maybe the pelvic torsion, and then to the back's decision to, well, decompensate and protect itself so acutely.
How does the source suggest distinguishing pain from a, let's say, true disc herniation, where a disc is definitely pressing on a nerve, from just a really bad lumbago or ischialgia episode without that direct nerve pressure?
It gives a specific clinical marker. Pain from a true disc herniation involves that strong pain and restricted movement, similar to severe lumbago, yes, but it also typically includes a positive Lesaig sign.
Lesaig sign. What's that?
It's a test. When someone's lying on their back, if lifting their straight leg reproduces that radiating leg pain and there's a painful stop point.
Oh.
That indicates tension on the sciatic nerve root, often, though not always, from disc pressure.
Got it. So a specific test points more towards direct nerve involvement.
Yes. Though the source does add that even severe lumbago or ischialgia can sometimes involve some minor structural tissue injury, like little tears in the fascia or maybe the outer ring of the disc itself.
So even without a full herniation, there can be some tissue damage.
Right. And in those cases, the body's protective posture is still necessary for healing that tissue.
Okay. Going back to treatment for acute pain, you highlighted how those integral techniques, like orthobiony, offer relaxation rather than forcing it. Is that particularly relevant when the body is in that protective, stiffened state?
The source really emphasizes this point. Because that stiffness is often protective, techniques that offer relaxation are highlighted as beneficial. Why? Because the body can choose to accept that release if and when it feels ready, when it feels safe.
It respects the body's wisdom, almost.
Exactly. It's inherent protective wisdom, which is really key in an acute episode, according to this view.
That makes perfect sense if you see the stiffness as protection, not just failure. What practical advice does the source offer for someone who is actually in the throes of acute back pain right now? Listen to this, maybe.
Yeah, the main message seems to be, listen to your body. It's signaling its needs through the pain.
Okay, so what does it need?
For acute pain, the source suggests a balance, either absolute bed rest or light, gentle movement. Ideally, maybe alternating between the two, depending on what feels right.
And avoiding certain movements seems kind of obvious.
Definitely. The source specifically says avoid prolonged sitting, avoid prolonged standing in one spot, definitely avoid bending and lifting anything heavy.
Right.
It also gives a specific tip. Avoid getting cold on the back and legs. Keep warm, especially in winter.
Good practical tip. What about medication? Painkillers.
The source acknowledges that common painkillers, especially those with anti-inflammatory properties like diclofenac or ibuprofen and also muscle relaxants, can sometimes provide helpful relief during these acute episodes.
Just to get through the worst of it.
Exactly. But it adds a caution.
Oh.
Yes. If painkillers are needed for a longer period, they should really be taken alongside a stomach protector medication, like omeprazole, to prevent stomach irritation or damage.
Right, standard medical advice there. Okay, finally, the source just briefly touches on chronic pain. How does it define or frame that?
It describes chronic pain as basically a state where the pain loses its original job, its function as a warning signal. It effectively becomes a separate illness in itself. The source calls it a pain disease.
When the pain becomes the problem, not just a symptom.
Exactly. And in these really complex cases, the aim is typically what's called a multimodal treatment approach involving various therapies working together.
Like pain clinics often offer.
Precisely. But even in that persistent chronic state, the source offers an insight, linking back to its core perspective.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
Even for chronic pain, the source suggests the root of the problem is often an overlooked underlying disturbance.
Overlooked? How?
It links this back again to an overload of the body's connective tissue system, the fascia and ground system, and a kind of rigidity or stiffness in the body's vegetative reaction, that involuntary stress response system we talked about earlier. Still seeing those deeper systems is key.
So pulling all this together, the key insights from this deep dive into the source material seem to be back pain, super common, yes, but also surprisingly often non-specific, meaning the exact cause isn't always obvious and it's not strictly linked to how worn your spine looks.
Right. This text really highlights how factors like pelvic alignment, things like pelvic torsion, and also how stress impacts our nervous system and our fascia, our connective tissue, how muscle tension, all play really significant, sometimes overlooked, roles.
Yeah, the things maybe not showing up clearly on an MRI. And we saw different approaches exist. There's the classical symptomatic functional methods, and then this integral orthopedics view presented here.
Mm-hmm. Which attempts to look deeper at that neurovegetative regulation, the fascial network, information transfer, trying to treat those underlying system causes along with the symptoms.
And that the body's reaction in acute pain, the stiffening, might not be failure, but actually an intelligent protective mechanism.
Yeah, signaling needs like rest or gentle movement while avoiding strain and cold.
And that techniques which offer relaxation might be particularly suitable then, respecting that protective state.
Exactly. The source consistently points towards how interconnected the body is and how these fundamental systems, the fascia, the vegetative nervous system response, could be central to both acute pain and potentially even those stubborn chronic pain states.
What's fascinating here, I think, is how this source kind of reframes the conversation. It's constantly nudging us to look beyond just the mechanical structure, the bones, the discs, and consider these deeper, less visible systems as fundamental contributors.
It suggests the problem is often, you know, system-wide, not just localized right there at the painful spot.
So here's a provocative thought, then, for you, our listener, to consider based on what we've unpacked today. Given that even chronic pain, according to this perspective, might stem from an often missed underlying issue, maybe a disturbance focus or a stiffness in the body's fundamental systems, like those involuntary stress responses getting stuck or the connective tissues becoming rigid. What does that suggest about how you might approach any persistent discomfort you experience? Does it make you think about looking beyond just the obvious symptoms and maybe considering those deeper, less visible aspects of your body's overall functioning and perhaps your own response to stress, something to mull over?